Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas. It's For the Love of Food at SaveYourLife.com. And coming up April 14th and 15th is two afternoons of a conference, the Finger Lakes Bev Conference, Beverage Conference. And you can, if you register by April 5th, you'll get sent in the mail to you four hard ciders, four beers to have as part of virtual tastings each of those afternoons. Those are coming from Three Brothers. And they'll, as part of the virtual tasting, they'll be talking about them. And so it's $75 registration for this these two afternoons of conference that will be done virtually this year. And you, I mean, this is intended for people in the industry, people who own a cidery or brewery or thinking about starting one, a winery, maybe people that work at wineries or breweries. But really, for $75, you can pick and choose a bunch of sessions that appeal, I think, to just someone who's interested in wine and beer and hard cider and learning more about what's happening with them in the Finger Lakes. And a lot of what they'll be discussing can be applied to a lot of different fields. You know, the keynote speaker from Portland, Oregon, it's the voice of Beervana, Jeff Allworth. He's going to be talking about emerging from the pandemic, which pretty much applies to everyone. Again, you'll get these. I mean, even if you just signed up for the conference just to get the four beers and the four ciders, you know, they'd be shipped to your door and you'd be paying, $10 each just for those, less than that. The conference is a bonus. So, and check out the schedule online. It's flxcraftbevcon.com and read about some of the speakers they have coming. I mean, some of them, like the New York State Liquor Authority, talking about regulations. A lot of people aren't going to be too interested in that. I'm going to follow it because I'm wondering what they're going to do as the pandemic ends. Will restaurants still be able to sell wine with takeout? Will they be able to sell cocktails takeout? There's, you know, a lot of things they've been allowed to do, and really, especially the cocktails, from my impression, but the wine to some degree, has helped some money to come into restaurants during shutdowns and severe restrictions on dining. So they've been important steps. There's a chance they'll continue, but maybe we'll get a sense of that from Thomas Donohue, New York State Liquor Authority. So that one, you know, I can see most of the general public not being that interested in it. There's also a session on engaging with media, telling your brand's story. This applies to, any business. And most of these are panels with key people in the tourism, the wine, the beer, cider industries around the state. So there's a tourism panel attracting new visitors after the pandemic with Brittany Gibson from the Seneca Lake Wine Trail and Valerie Knobloch from the Finger Lakes Visitors Connection and Colleen Onifer from Break the Ice Media. So, I think these are going to be a lot of fun to listen to, and you'll meet some of these people virtually, get to know them a little bit by watching them online. There's a session on how to save time and make more money on social media from two people that have content on Draft. There's data points for tasting rooms. There's what's next for hemp in New York State. Again, these are a number of the panels that are going to be going on. It's Wednesday and Thursday afternoons, April 14th and 15th. And in order to get the beer and cider sent to you, you have to register $75 by April 5th, which is Monday. So I think it's a great bargain. I registered quite a while ago, and they'll be shipping those beer and ciders to me. And I'm looking forward to taking part in it. Again, $75 for all of this, I think, is a bargain. It really is. And it should be very interesting. If you want any more details, go to flxcraftbevcon.com. And I've been out planting my vegetable garden and also starting some seeds indoors this last week or so. And I don't have that big a vegetable garden, so we'll see. Once you get a sense for how many things I planted, we'll see how this all goes. Some of these are older seeds that I just haven't used up, and so the germination rate will be lower on them. But so I used more seeds, and I think I'll probably still have some come up. We'll see how many. But I planted a couple of kinds of spinach from Fruition Seeds in Naples. You can mail order seeds from them, and now's a great time to do it. They'll get to you pretty quickly, and you can get those in the ground this next week, the cool weather crops. So I've got Butterfly and Beaujolais spinach. The Beaujolais has a magenta red veins. So can't wait to see that one. And I planted a baby leaf spinach and a container spinach. So Catalina was the baby leaf one. I've also got some seeds from Seeds of Change and Renee's Seeds and also the Alliance of Native Seed Keepers. And one of their seeds, Curled Cress Microgreen, has already come up in the garden. And it was fine with the two cold nights we had. And these cool weather crops can take frosts, even freezes to some degree. I planted kale, vates, and bare necessities, and a Tuscan baby leaf, and a regular Tuscan kale. And I just harvested the last of the Tuscan kale from last year a couple weeks ago with the snow leaving. Also one called Cyber Frill Kale, which is from Fruition Seeds. It says, extravagantly frilled and exceptionally tender, beautifully green and purple. So some of these they might not still have. I suspect they do. I got this one a couple years ago. And seeds store pretty well. So you do start to lose some germination, but generally you're probably going to be able to start them. And all those greens plus some lettuce, this one called Flashy Troutback, which has speckled red on green background. And then a red salad bowl lettuce, and one called Merlot. Couldn't resist that. Merlot lettuce. Can't wait to see. That was from the Hudson Seed Library, Hudson Valley Seed Library. I found those seeds. Where did I see these? Maybe at Green Acres up in Greece. I had seeds from Hudson Valley Seed Library. I love their little seed packets, little square, very different seed packets. Also planted a red deer tongue heirloom lettuce from Renee's garden. That looks kind of cool. And then a bunch of peas, snap peas, as well as some snow peas. So there's a super sugar snap. So these are the peas where you eat the whole pod, which I think is a cool thing. And once you're used to doing that, you don't really want to take peas out of the pod. These sugar snap are just fabulous. And then there's another one called a tall snap pea with magnolia blossoms. So a more colorful blossom on this SNAP-P that gets a little bit bigger. Then also planted some bok choy. Yeah, you wouldn't believe how small my garden is. There's going to be a lot of plants coming up over the next couple of weeks. And last year I did especially well with some lettuce, late season lettuce I planted in window boxes. We were harvesting our own lettuce into December because I could bring them in on cold nights and put them back out again. So I saved some of these seeds, and I'll plant some in late July for a fall crop of these cool weather plants. I didn't plant any radishes. Didn't really have room. Rather use the greens that you can kind of harvest, and the peas too. You can harvest them on an ongoing basis, and you can eat them right out in the garden. I mean, you can eat radishes out there too, but I don't know. These are more of a family favorite than radishes, but radishes are a great thing to plant this time of the year. You'll have them in 29 days. So in the last hour on my gardening show, I talked about getting rid of some of your lawn, and I was talking more about native plants and ornamentals. But another reason to get rid of part of your lawn is to plant more things to eat. And you don't need to have a rectangular, vegetable garden. You can incorporate these things into your landscape. I also planted some Swiss chard too, by the way. And that is one of the most colorful plants you could have in your garden, edible or not edible. Swiss chard is fantastic. And quite a few of these, including kale, will grow in some shade. A surprising amount of shade, actually. So they won't get as big, they won't grow as fast, but they will grow. And so there may be some shadier parts where you could use some of these things that can tolerate shade, or things like lettuce that don't like the hot summer sun might survive longer. They might bolt or go to seed later if they have some shade for the early summer. So what could you get rid of in terms of your lawn and plant some ornamentals? The kale is beautiful to look at. Again, I know people that have kale that they don't eat. They just like the way it looks in their garden. Many of these can be done as ornamentals. The snap peas, you could grow up a fence and, let your neighbor eat them if you're not interested. So there's almost all of these things are kind of cool looking. Some of the vining things, it was way too early to plant outdoors, but you could start the seeds indoors. And I started some cantaloupe and a number of different kinds of squash. Quite a few other vegetables that I've started in terms of seeds. Those will start growing. I also started some flowers, sunflowers, some nasturtiums, some straw flowers, some bush beans. There's zucchini, one called Dark Star, which is almost a black zucchini. Really cool color. Still green, but very, very dark green. And those are seeds from yet another seed company. I tend to I like to visit different garden centers this time of the year, and many of them have different seed companies. So I'll check out the seed selection and find a couple here, a couple there. And that's why I end up with seeds from, 15 different seed companies, is just accumulating them as I'm visiting garden centers. So if you can find some more spaces to grow things to eat, put them in hanging baskets, put them in containers on a patio, put them in a window box. It is amazing how much food you can grow in a small area. And I have fond memories of visiting this Portuguese farmer in California who was a friend of my grandparents. He had a little bit of lawn under a big avocado tree, huge avocado tree, with amazing avocados. And he had this because you don't want the avocado to drop on the ground from, you know, 30, 40 feet up. He had this long pole with a tiny basket on it, and he would use this sort of telescoping pole to reach the avocado and just twist it a little bit and then bring it gently down. This was a, you know, like a 30, at least a 30-foot tree, and it took up a big area kind of in the center of his driveway with some lawn around it. But then the rest of the property was plants to eat, and these were layered, sort of, it's kind of like the idea of forest gardening, you know, forest for food, you know, trees that produce edible nuts and things, and then you grow other layers underneath, things that can take some shade, you know, and you can grow a lot of food in a small space. So they had trellises and sort of overhead canopies with grapes and you know, beans and squash and cucumbers and all kinds of things growing vertically. And then, of course, things in the ground, kind of raised beds. This was in Northern California, so, you know, more moderate climate than what we have, but you know, not the San Joaquin Valley and sort of much, much warmer areas. But we had multiple season crops in his gardens, so, you know, you can take the same space and basically grow 2 to 3 crops in that same space over the season. You start out with cool weather things now, and then you have some tomatoes and squash and other things that go in for the summer. And then, you know, those, some start to fade a bit or get diseased or, you know, finish production. And you can sort of plant around them some of the cool weather things for fall and have things to harvest, as I said, all the way through December. So you can plant cherry tomatoes in containers. There's tumbling toms, a cherry tomato you can plant in a, or you might find it for sale in a hanging basket. There are compact versions of these things. Just out at Sarah's Garden Center, they brought in a lot of blueberries, some of those very dwarf ones that you know, don't take up that much space. They had also dwarf and thornless raspberries and tons of strawberries available. And strawberries make an awesome ground cover. You know, beautiful flowers, great fall color on the leaves, and of course, maybe the occasional strawberry that the birds don't eat. So look at your yard, as I said on the gardening show this morning. Think about what lawn you can get rid of, and especially think about what you could grow to eat, because especially lettuce and spinach, being able to just go out and pick it and eat it in the garden or make a quick salad is such an amazing gift, really, I think. We did a lot of that last summer. Had the most successful kale and spinach and lettuce crops that I've ever had, and obviously looking forward to more given all the different varieties that I've planted in what is a very small garden. It's going to be crowded, which means fewer weeds, the more crowded things are. So if you have questions about what you could grow to eat, email me. You can also have fun growing some rather odd things just to see what they're like. You can grow a hullless oat. I got some of those from Fruition Seeds, and also rice. A wild rice, and Fruition Seeds also has a northern adapted peanut. So, and I grew this a couple years ago. You can grow your own peanuts, and they're kind of cool. There's artichokes you can grow. Those might be better to get from a nursery already started. Because you need to fool them into thinking they've been through winter so that they'll produce this season. But I often have an artichoke or two in the garden. I also planted some corn, some popping corn. So you can actually take the corn, dry out the cob, and then pop it. These are heirloom varieties, and a glass gem, I think, is this variety, which comes from the Cherokees, I believe, and the kernels are just amazing colors. Look it up online. I think Fruition Seed sells this. I got this through the Alliance of Native Seed Keepers. But smaller growing corn, and so I have that sort of at the back of the garden, which is going to fight it out with the sunflowers, which come back every year. They just seed themselves, and we actually have a garden of sunflowers as much as anything else. So again, this is the ideal time of the year to think about growing things to enjoy yourselves. Start some things from seed. Start things with some of the transplants that you can buy. Todd Lighthouse of Lighthouse Gardens, he always has some really good starts of lettuce. So I grow some from seed, and then I also get some from him that's already started and, you know, is a few weeks ahead of what I have. It was the lettuce I got from him in the summer that gave us a crop all the way through the fall into early winter. There's also things like hardy kiwi and all kind of hazelnuts and currants and gooseberries. There's a million things that you could grow to eat in your yard. Some of it maybe for, you know, because you've read about it in literature and you're fascinated, you want to try it. Some of it because your parents or grandparents grew it and talked about making, you know, currant jelly or something. So there are many reasons to grow more edible things in your yard. And all of them are going to give you something more interesting than a lawn. We have way too many lawns. So if you want some suggestions, ideas based on, you know, how much sun you have, how much space you have, or looking for sources of something in particular, email me, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll try to get you some ideas. You'll end up with a more colorful yard. I mean, kale is so beautiful. There's so many different kinds. I already mentioned the Swiss chard. Bright Lights is a collection of especially beautiful veins of Swiss chard. I think I mentioned this months ago, but I was on Cape Cod last year, I think, and a restaurant called Sunbird, which is a fabulous restaurant, they had individual stems of Swiss chard as the ornament in a vase. And these are some very wide stems, but these vibrant colors and beautiful leaves, and then they had them in the vase, you know, like you'd have a bouquet of flowers, but they just had one stem from each of these vases from the Swiss chard, and it was really gorgeous. And then when the sunlight came through the windows onto that Swiss chard, just lit up those stems. It was pretty spectacular. I think one of the most striking displays in a vase that I've seen in any restaurant. And it was so simple. I mean, they could have put 10 stems in there, I suppose, of Swiss chard with different colors. But by only having one stem, you could see the light coming through it. I'm going to grow some of that Swiss chard this year just to do that, to replicate what they did. In past years, I've gone out to Van Putty Gardens, which has many different plants, annuals, vegetables, trees. You know, it's a big garden center in Greece. But more than anyone else, they would have these little six-packs of Swiss chard with, you know, like 50 seeds in them that had germinated. So normally you go to a garden center, you buy a six pack, and there's six plants in there. Sometimes there's eight or nine. But with this Swiss chard, they would put like, well, it was 50 is maybe an exaggeration. It was like more like 35 plants out of the six pack. And so I'd buy two six packs, and I'd be able to plant Swiss chard for, you know, three different people from that one six pack, which was about the cost of a packet of seeds, which would probably have about 50 seeds in it anyway. So, you know, you do have to separate those little Swiss chard plants. If you just take, you know, 12 of them in one little cell of the six pack and plant that, they are going to compete too much, and you're not going to have as much Swiss chard as if you separated them. So you have to separate them kind of carefully, but they're tough plants. And then, you know, they get rolling. You're going to have some amazing Swiss chard this summer. And the same with basil. I've run into that too with basil. Bristol's Garden Center in particular, with little pots of basil that might have 30 different seedlings in it. Or more, and those you have to be a little more careful with. Their stems are more delicate as you divide them, and it's way too early to plant them outside. But you could, you know, I don't know if Bristol's even has it yet, but you could separate them and put them in small pots to get them rooted, and then put them outside in a few weeks once we get warmer weather. Basil really can't take a frost or even cold weather. So that's one of the later things to put in your garden. But when you're dividing it, you want to use the leaves to separate it rather than the stems, because the stems you can crush, and it can't grow a new stem. It can grow new leaves, but it can't grow a new stem. So when you're separating things like that, it's good to remember to use the leaves, gently pull on those, and separate it from the roots almost more than from the top. So again, a couple of tips on having a lot of basil, and we've got to have some pesto, because we have a big stash of pesto still in our freezer from all the basil we had last summer. I got to get some of that out of the freezer, and just a great taste of summer with pesto that you've put away for the winter. And Cornell Cooperative Extension is, Monroe County is doing some sessions on home food processing, and look them up online. They are going to be doing more of that this year, is my guess, given they're starting early. And so again, these are sessions on how to preserve food that you grow yourself, or that you buy maybe at a farmer's market in quantity. That's kind of going back in time to what people used to do. I often freeze things, especially I don't do so much canning, but freezing that pesto. I puree the leaves into olive oil and pack it into mason jars, put some olive oil on top of it to kind of seal the oxygen out. And when you defrost that, it is almost just out of your garden. It really is pretty extraordinary and vibrant green. So it's going to give us a taste of summer here for the early spring, and it'll spur me on to plant more basil this year. And if you have comments, suggestions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back with Discover the Finger Lakes. Tomorrow it's the grapevine here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.